The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 7 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 13th of December, 2023. And you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. It's good to have you on board for the middle show of the week. And what a show it is. Okay, we have so much stuff coming up. Stuff to keep you informed and entertained, of course, but lots of fun as well. We are going to have, and I can reveal exclusively for you right now, we're going to have €2,000 to give away later on in the show. €2,000 in cash euro money. It is part, of course, of our grander day over 10 days as we lead up to the big Christmas card draw. We obviously didn't have a phone answered yesterday, so that means it's rolled over to this show. So we've got €2,000 up for grabs on this program. So if you bought a ticket for the card draw, as best as you can, please try and have your phone ready for us to ring. I can tell you it probably will be in the last hour of the program, okay? Which means that if you want to enter that competition, there's still €9,000. What day is today? There must be €9,000. Yeah, there's still €9,000 to give away. Two of that will be given away today, fingers crossed. And the car as well, all for a tenner. Go on to our website, highlandradio.com. Give us a call on 07491 25000. We can process it over the phone if you prefer, or in fact, if you're in and around Letterkenny, call in to us at the mountaintop, Letterkenny, and we'll help you out there. We also have our fantastic competition, thanks to McGee's. I'm going to tell you more about that a little later on. But let's get down to the serious business of the newspapers this morning. We'll start with the Inish Times. And a young Melville woman who has been battling health issues for almost 10 years has spoken of her frustration with the health service. Natasha Crumlish, a mother of two, has told of her struggle to receive proper care since discovering a lump underneath her tongue in 2014. At a public meeting in Letterkenny on Thursday night, Ms. Crumlish spoke passionately about the lack of adequate oral maxillo care in the county. Oral maxillo is the diagnosis and surgical care of the mouth, jaws, skull, face, head and neck. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, a positive news story of just shy of €28,000 for Twin Towns Lost and Found Dogs. The tireless work of Twin Towns Lost and Found Dogs has been acknowledged with funding of €27,850. Two other Donegal animal welfare charities have been allocated a total of €87,600 in funding announced by the Minister for Agriculture. Let's go to the Donegal Post this morning. And Christmas came early for the Bluestack Foundation in Donegal Town thanks to a kind-hearted donation from businessman Tim Kelly, described as life-changing. Cahirlock of Donegal County Council, Martin Harley, made the presentation of an unnamed but substantial sum on behalf of Mr. Kelly, who was last week given the Freedom of Donegal. Young adults from the Training and Progression Programme sang Perfect by Ed Sheeran to welcome Councillor Harley to the facility. I'm delighted that Tim Kelly made the donation, and I'm over the moon for the very special place with all the fantastic singers, said Councillor Harley there. What a wonderful donation. Okay, well, it's been flagged long enough and it's come to pass. Ukrainian refugees coming here will get much less money and much less access to accommodation, I suppose you could say. Fears of a breakdown in public support for Ireland's response to the Ukrainian refugee crisis prompted ministers to slash social welfare and limit accommodation for new arrivals fleeing the war. A confidence briefing of senior ministers warned of a potential significant increase in new arrivals fleeing the war after Christmas and an accommodation shortage that could lead to a surge in refugees being forced to sleep on the streets. Not changing the current policy would create a substantial risk that the state would be unable to offer any accommodation to new Ukrainian refugees. Ministers were also warned it could lead to unplanned and manageable health and safety risks in the City West Reception Centre, as well as on-street homelessness and the downstream impacts of that. So there's an awful lot to unpack here, obviously. They've reduced the amount of money from €220 to €38.80. Accommodation will be provided for 90 days, and after that, you're on your own. Now, it remains to be seen what will happen. It is not in place yet, so there could be a big influx, because this will not apply once it's introduced. This will not apply to people who are already living here. So I don't know if you, if I were here, say for instance I was here, and my family was remained in Ukraine or in another part of Europe, theoretically I might say, right, we need to get you over here. Not for any malicious reasons, but because life might be better here, we need to get you over here as soon as possible. So there may well be a rush between now and whenever this is introduced. But let's call it as it is. I mean, people are discussing, you know, what will Ukrainian families do or Ukrainian individuals do after 90 days under the new regime? Well, the whole idea of it is that they don't come here in the first place. And there's no point trying to dress it up as anything else. It is, for the most part, is it not, a deterrent, but it remains to be seen. That being said, it's very important to point out, and I'm sure it has been pointed out, that these rules will apply only to new arrivals and not people who are currently here. The money will still continue to be paid, close on 2 million a day, to the hosts who host them. Right, OK, the Irish Times this morning. Enoch Burke looks set to remain in Mountjoy Prison for the Christmas period after he again refused to undertake to comply with a High Court order to stay away from Wilson's Hospital school. And that is what this comes down to. If he goes into court today and says, I will not trespass on Wilson's Hospital school, he'll be out of prison within an hour. I mean, obviously, it depends on how far back in that story you want to go that you could say, well, this is about him refusing to use different pronouns for a student. But the bottom line is the reason he's in prison right now is because he refuses to not just keep turning up at the school. Well, after Justice Mark Sanfay, I beg your pardon, asked him several times at a hearing yesterday if he would comply with the order, Mr. Burke said compliance with it would equate to giving up his religious beliefs and would be an endorsement of transgenderism. Now, I think even his greatest supporters, however many of them there are, I don't know, might forgive him at this point for saying, right, I won't go to the school and still believe that he has his religious beliefs intact. But, I mean, obviously others might have a different point of view. The judge directed Mr. Burke and members of his family to leave the courtroom for interrupting the court during a fraught and at times heated High Court sitting. And the Burke family were taking issue with the fact that if this is the same case, and I believe it is, they're taking issue with the fact that the judge had announced that this would be a remote hearing, so all parties would appear remotely. But those opposing Burke, which would be the defence, I suppose, turned up while he was via video link, and they took issue with that. Well, whose fault is it for overcrowding in our hospitals? Letterkenny University Hospital on Monday, 57 people on trolleys. Yesterday it was 47. Sligo, 54 in trolleys, 45 on Monday, 45 yesterday. Well, the Minister for Health says that it is the hospital's fault because they're not discharging patients at the weekend for overcrowding. Now, I ran through some of these figures as it relates to the hospital, and it can really be quite random because if you go back over the last like 8 Fridays, there's 2 Fridays where there's 40, 50 people waiting for a bed. That's ahead of the weekend. So I'm not sure how discharging is going to address issues towards the end of the week, over the weekend discharging. But anyway, be that as it may. Stephen Donnelly has blamed doctors and nurses for failing to deal with the overcrowding within hospitals. The health minister accused some hospitals of leaving patients on beds for too long and said this partly explained why 747 patients were left waiting on trolleys on Monday morning. Now, many of you might agree with that. Perhaps some of you had, perhaps some of you were yourself or had family members who were in hospital Friday, Saturday, Sunday and were ready to go home, but you couldn't get a discharge letter. So I'm not saying the minister's wrong. And maybe his words were more nuanced than being presented in the paper. Well, walking into Cabot yesterday morning, he said some hospitals are failing to do what needs to be done. There is quite a wide variance. So have you a view on that? 086 60 25,000 or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. It appears the price of power is coming down. I was contacted by a few people yesterday who got their bills through. They were sort of pay-as-you-go. They were bill pay. And the €150 credit wasn't on their bill. Now, I'm not really quite sure why that might be. I suspect that the billing period is before the discount being applied. That would be my only suggestion. But if any of you out there have any insight into that, please let me know, because some people received bills this week and the €150 credit wasn't on it yet. I know many pay-as-you-go have already received that credit. But anyway, the bills are coming down, apparently. Finance Minister Michael McGrath in the Star today has welcomed an energy provider's decision to drop its prices in the new year and said that other companies will have little option but to respond. SSE Airtricity announced that from February 1st, 2024, it is decreasing its standard unit rate by 12.8% for electricity and by 11.5% for gas. Speaking to reporters in Dublin, Mr. McGrath said that the budgetary inflation forecast for this year is still 5% and 3% for next year, but that there was a lot of volatility in wholesale energy prices. But anyway, if you are with SSE Airtricity, and others may well follow, from the start of February next year, the cost of electricity will reduce by 12.8%, which is not insignificant, it has to be said. Let us see what's in the Mirror today. Finance Minister Michael McGrath, he's quoted on a different story here. He said, cash is here to stay. A lot of people believe the plans are afoot to get rid of cash. I think a lot of it is being driven by people moving away from cash voluntarily. People like myself, not for any good reason, it's just pure convenience. But also a lot of businesses just are saying, right, we prefer to do it over the card. I don't necessarily think government policy is driving it, but anyway. He says cash is here to stay as he launched a public consultation looking for people's views on a national payment strategy. He added he was finalising a bill that would enshrine people's access to cash and define an appropriate level of cash needed in communities. That was flagged earlier in the year and seems to be coming to pass now. And finally, an offer of 2.9 billion in financial, this is 2.5 billion euro financial package from the UK government to support the return of the Stormont executive has been labelled as a short-term sugar rush. Well, give me some of that sugar. Alliance Party Deputy Leader Stephen Ferry said the deal will not solve the financial issues. He said, we will get a short-term sugar rush in terms of resources, but we will be back in the same situation within 18 months to 2 years. Well, why not give the people of Northern Ireland 18 months to 2 years then of a sugar rush, for crying out loud, because there's an awful lot not going on that should be going on. Right, okay, that's the papers. €2,000 is going to be given away on the show in the third hour of the programme as part of our car draw. Get your tickets now if you want to be in that draw. There's £1,000 a day right up until Friday week. If a call's not answered, you have to answer your phone within five or six rings. If the call's not answered, it rolls over. That's why we're at today. So it's £2,000 today. Looking forward to making someone's day. My God, it would make my month, let alone day. Right, okay. Listen, we'll be back with our first guests on the show after we take a quick break. We're joined on the programme now by GP Dr. Moira Finn. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you keeping?
Grand. I'm not working today. I'm just chatting to you. So that's a good day.
Okay. Right. I think it's the first part of that's probably more favourable than the second.
Moira,
before we get into it, I suppose, because I'm just thinking of maybe people who've, got younger children or just brought a baby home. And it's important, I suppose, that we get this information out. But I want to inform people, but not startle them or make them overly worried, unless maybe you think that's appropriate, not appropriate, you know what I mean? So put it into context in terms of, you know, the likelihood of catching RSV, you know, and if it is caught, how often it becomes incredibly serious, if you know what I mean. So we have a context moving forward with the advice, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And awareness is key, and it's a really fine balance between awareness and alarm. So and there has been a campaign over the last couple of years increasing awareness. And I think that's done a lot of good work. So RSV, people may not have even heard the name 2 or 3 years ago. But what it stands for is respiratory syncytial virus. It's a seasonal virus. It's very, very common. And of the viruses that hit the Northern Hemisphere every winter, flu and RSV are probably the most common, and it is the most common cause of respiratory illness in children. And it's estimated that 90% of kids get exposed before the age of two. So that just shows you how common it is. A small percentage of those need to be looked after in community setting, in kind of primary care, and then an even smaller percentage need to be seen in a hospital setting. But when we have a surge like we have done in the last couple of weeks, we do see a lot of sick babies coming into primary care. And unfortunately, maybe about 10% of them will end up in a hospital setting. And if they're very young, if they're premature, other underlying conditions, or under the age of 6 months, they are at risk of developing quite serious respiratory issues. So it's the very smallies that we really worry about most. But all children and adults are actually likely to be exposed to RSV. But what happens as you get older and bigger and actually able to kind of control your symptoms a little better, it tends to be a less serious illness.
And it can be not frustrating, it can be difficult to deal with, and you can correct me, doctor, of course, when I'm wrong, but a lot of people, and I've been that soldier as well, the baby seems off form, you've heard conversations like this, and you go to the GP, there's not an awful lot the GP can do except send you away and say, look, keep an eye on him or her, and if you spot this or that over the next 2 or 3 days, then come back to us. And people sort of leave not reassured, but sort of, you know what I mean? But what can you do?
Actually, you know, and you're absolutely right. And it's incredibly frustrating for us as well, because, you know, we all upper respiratory tract infections, no matter what the cause, start in the same way. They start as a snuffle, a bit of a temperature, maybe a little bit of a cough, decreased feeding. And it's very hard to determine who is going to be the one who'd actually get sick. We do worry more about the younger and the ones that I've just said, the more kind of the ones that may have had a little bit of respiratory issues or premature. But what we do, and what's really important, is this is why awareness is key and information is key. You bring your child in if you are concerned. You're never wasting somebody's time if you're concerned about a small child, no matter how busy the services are. That's really important. And, you know, as GPs, we do, and we're stretched, and this time of year is a really horrible time of year for us. But small babies are our priority. So you're never wasting anybody's time. If you're concerned, bring them in. And what we often do is we check and we make sure there's nothing worse going on and there's nothing active going on. Or sometimes a child comes in and they're already suffering complications of RSV, which could be when it goes into the lungs, so the lower part of the respiratory system. And then we might say your child has bronchiolitis and give advice about how to deal with that, or pneumonia, in which case we'd be referring into the hospital. So what we do is assess how well the child is managing and give advice about the danger signs, the red flags is what we'd call them, of what to look for to see if there's a deterioration. Because the majority of babies improve rather than to deteriorate. And, you know, information is key. Antibiotics are not the answer to this and almost everything that happens in the winter. But we've been led into this kind of, or the population has been led into this kind of notion that if I go out with a prescription, I've got something, therefore I've something I can do.
It just makes you feel better. I can put myself, I know that it's not, the antibiotics don't necessarily deal with it, but you walk out and it's like, well, keep an eye for the next couple of days. But listen,
also as a parent, putting an antibiotic into a child is a nightmare.
Yep.
And you know, you've got so much trouble doing that, and then they have diarrhea or they vomit it up and stuff. So you know, you may feel happier that you have a solution, but it's not the solution and it actually makes the situation worse. So again, this is why the information and the education is key.
And we want obviously those antibiotics when they are actually needed to have their maximum effect as well, I'm sure. So before we get to what to look out for, people might say, well, this is just a fad. You're just stuck for something to talk about because I never heard about this before, right? So in 2022, we started talking about RSV because of obviously the amount of people that were getting it, the amount of hospitalizations, the amount of particularly young people that were getting very ill. So it's always been there, but why did it come more into sort of the mainstream conversation and more of a broader understanding amongst the population in 2022? Is it off the back of the social distancing through COVID?
I feel it is. I think it's actually, if there was one positive from COVID, is the understanding from the general population that a huge amount of illness is caused by viruses, untreatable viruses. So, you know, maybe we would have said before, and you might have heard this before, and most parents would have, it's a virus. We can't do much about it, go home. Now we give it a name. That's the only difference. It's most likely RSV. Now it could also be COVID, but we'll check for that. It could also be a rhinovirus, you know, so there are viruses, but we're giving it a name. And giving it a name doesn't make it more dangerous or more prevalent. It just kind of makes people more aware of it. And that kind of understanding now that viruses have to be dealt with in a different way to bacterial infections. Probably that has raised in our consciousness since the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. If there's there's a couple of positives around the COVID thing, very few, but mm-hmm. the other very big positive is the fact that people understand that all those things, social distancing, masks, hand washing, sanitizing, staying away if you're sick, they matter. And RSV, like all the other viruses, really slumped during the COVID pandemic because people were doing all these things. Now, nobody wants to get back to that, but it is really important to remember. So they were the reasons why these viruses didn't circulate then.
Yeah.
And it would also be the way to intervene now.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that more in a little moment, because there's a lot of headlines about visiting and all that kind of stuff, new babies and things. But I want to get down to what to look out for. Now, are we Hudson? This happened to us over Christmas. And it becomes really, really clear the difference between, sort of a stuffy nose, a bit agitated, to sort of that, lethargic and unresponsive and stuff. But you're the medical expert, and I want you to talk us through it, because this is a lot about parents trusting themselves, I think, and you're going to empower them with the knowledge now.
I hope so. And it is. It is trusting yourself, but also trusting your instinct about when you think there's something different or something wrong. And always go with your instinct. And that's so important. As medics, we trust parents primarily, and we have to. So, like I said, all viruses of this nature will start as upper respiratory things. So that's the snuffle, like you said, and the little bit off form, maybe not feeding very well, bit of a cough, just snuffly. And you kind of want to clear out the snot and you can't. And it's frustrating. The danger signs are when that respiratory infection goes a little bit lower and your child is struggling to breathe. Now, that isn't always really dramatic, but what will often start with small babies is that they'll flare their nostrils because they're literally trying to get more air into their lungs. They'll also breathe more actively from their belly, and you'll see their ribs sucking in. So you always look at their belly, open the vest and have a look at them and see what's happening with their belly. They may breathe very quickly. They may stop feeding well because it's difficult for them to feed. If they feed unwell, they start becoming slow to feed. They become lethargic because they're dehydrated as well. So they become lethargic. Their colour may go off. They may be, like you said, a little bit hard to wake, hard to rise. They may have a temperature that's hard to manage, but that's not always a very big symptom with RSV. And they're the main thing. So looking at the breathing, if there's an effort in the breathing, then your baby's trying to get oxygen in and it's not working as well as they could. So that's when you intervene. Less than 3 wet nappies in a day is a nice sign to go with. If they've less than 3 wet nappies, they're dehydrated. Mm. They need to be checked. Okay. Yeah. So that's one kind of hard thing to go with. And looking at the belly breathing, looking at the rate of breathing is a really good thing to look for too. And then the lethargy. I suppose those three things are things that are kind of information parents can kind of take home with and say, right, that happens. I go and I check. Yes. And don't wait. We don't want anybody up all night looking at their child going, is this dangerous or not? We'd far prefer to see them in advance.
Is this a bit of a silly suggestion to actually, now, if you're listening to this and you have a newborn or a young child, is actually to have a look at how they breathe normally, in inverted commas? Because I know myself, right, that as soon as you think they're in any way poorly, all of a sudden every, intake of breath almost. Now, I'm kind of an anxiously, nervousy person. I'm not terribly normal. But, I mean, it's no harm to have a look at it, right, and say, right, that's normal when they're fine, so that they can get a better read then, that if they're looking for changes, they might be a little bit more obvious. They may be very well obvious, don't get me wrong, but I'm trying to reassure people so that you can be not scared, but really knowledgeable.
That's actually a really sensible thing to do. And it's actually how we teach young doctors. They have to see normal, well kids to actually understand what's not normal, So absolutely. Now, I don't know whether that goes kind of videoing a normal child. And Jesus, we all know that small babies grunt and make all sorts of noise anyway, at the best of times. But yeah, looking at their bellies, looking at how they breathe when they're comfortable asleep, they're actually lovely to sleep in the back. And when a baby's really chilled out, the hands are back and, actually looking at how they breathe then is actually a really good way of actually knowing what's normal. But you'll see it. And I'm sure there's videos online about what babies look like when they have that kind of belly breathing and grunting. Yeah. There's really good info online as well. There's a HSE websites, and then there's a Together Against RSV, really good information as well. So, you know, like you said, arm yourself with the information beforehand so you'll know when to kind of be concerned or be calm and know that I'm on top of this.
Now, we're talking about the spread of it, right? Okay. Now, newborns, younger children often spend most of their time in the house. So it's very, oh, not everyone, of course, but it's very likely it'll be brought into the house or it'll be caught with interactions with someone else. And I think, you know, we as visitors need to listen to this advice as much as the parents or guardians of the children. So this is for everyone, because I was talking about this last week. And it can be a little bit awkward as to how you have this convo potentially. So what is your advice about, you know, if there's newborns or younger babies, particularly under 6 months, I think you referenced, in terms of, you know, kissing, holding, sort of close contact with?
Well, it's really tricky, isn't it? Because it goes against all our instincts. Everybody wants to see the newborn. Everybody wants to cuddle the newborn. But listen, this time of year, when it's RSV season, when it's surging, I think it is a very reasonable thing for us to know going visiting small babies, and for parents to be able to say, sorry, just don't kiss the baby, you know, have a look, you know. And when the baby's older, that's it's more appropriate that there's kind of handling. I think it's difficult. I don't think anybody should visit if they have any signs of a cold themselves, no matter how innocent it may be. I think if there's a lot circulating in your own community, it's perfectly reasonable to kind of ask people not to visit. I think hand washing and hand sanitizing is essential, no matter what age and what type, what season, with small babies, because they're very vulnerable to everything, small babies. And then you see, it's like you said, small babies are generally at home, and that's the ideal. But you will often have older siblings who are coming home and their children, you know, so they're getting it from the creche or from school. And again, that's where you kind of, if your child, older child is unwell, they probably shouldn't be in creche or school. Really difficult thing to say. My children are older. I don't have this problem anymore. But it's so hard to manage that. How do you get to work when your child just has a snuffle and you need to keep them home? And the other difficulty with that is you often ask elderly parents maybe to look after them in that situation. And they can be vulnerable to RSV if they have any underlying chest conditions themselves. So it's a really tricky thing to manage. But I think if we know, then those conversations aren't awkward, at least.
Yeah. OK. Listen, thank you. Great advice. Just a couple of questions coming in, and I saw a few people posting about this as well. Is there anything particularly going around amongst adults, you know, persistent chesty infections? Because as I say, we've a couple of people texting in, and I've seen other people complaining of this hard to shift.
Yeah, it's funny. You're in Donegal, I'm in Clare. It's the same thing down here, you know. It's probably RSV, but this is the winter season is when the viruses circulate, and they circulate from around October until February. That's why GPs generally and doctors, we're not so keen on Christmas. It's our busiest time of year. So there is a virus like that circulating all over the country. It's almost certainly viral. You'll have people who'd say to me, oh, I've been on two antibiotics and it's still not gone. 100%, that's because the antibiotics didn't make any difference. A cough can take minimum of 2 weeks to clear, maybe longer. Because if you think about it, a cough is your body's response to phlegm and inflammation, and it's trying to clear it. So it actually has a function. So don't be always afraid of a cough. A new cough or coughing blood or respiratory distress or something, that's different. But a cough, because your body's trying to clear the infection, isn't always a dangerous thing. You might be miserable, but, you know, it's that time of year.
I'm miserable at the best of times. Okay.
Listen, I'm sure you're not.
No, I'm not, of course. Dr. Moira Finn, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thanks so much indeed. Thanks for your time today. All right, take care of yourself. She's a GP there. Any comment on that? 086 60 25,000. Hopefully things like that are helpful for you and reassuring. That's what we want to do here on the programme. Okay, back with our next guest after these. Nearly 200 nations meeting in Dubai approved a first call for the world to transition away from fossil fuels, the top culprit of climate change behind a planetary crisis. After 13 days of talks and another sleepless night in a country built on oil wealth, the Emirati leadership of the COP28 summit banged a gavel to signal the world had reached consensus. Now, that's an interesting bit of terminology there. Caroline O'Doherty is the environmental correspondent with the Irish Times. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon, the Irish Independent, and joins us from Dubai. I almost had a sleepless night myself. Caroline, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
Right, so how is this being perceived over there? I mean, I know there is some concern coming out from the island nations who potentially are worst affected by the climate crisis. You know, some saying they were all on board, others saying the gavel was going down when they weren't there. What is the read on the ground as to how significant or otherwise this deal actually is?
Look, it is quite divided. It is significant for, I think that's undoubted. In 30 years of climate negotiations, we haven't had an agreement that says we have to move away from fossil fuels, which sounds utterly bonkers when you think of it. The closest they've ever come is 2 years ago, and they said we have to phase down coal because it's the dirtiest of fossil fuels. So even saying that countries are being called upon to transition away from fossil fuels in the energy system, as in burning coal, oil and gas, with acceleration in this critical decade, as in right now until the end of 2030, and with the plan to get to net zero by 2050, keeping in the science in mind. So it kind of has all the phrases that kind of hit the spot, if you like, in a lot of ways. There is concern, though, however, it's not the exact wording that most of the countries going into the talks looked for. They wanted phase out of fossil fuels. Now, linguistically, is there much difference between transitioning away and phasing out? Phase out, I suppose, sounds punchier. There probably isn't much of a difference. The concern is that there isn't.
Caroline, what that reads to me like is that these countries will continue to make their trillions in producing it unfettered, and we'll end up being discouraged from using it through expenditure.
Yeah, look, there are all sorts of concerns around this. There's a concern that the countries are being called upon to do it rather than absolutely required to do it. There's concerns that they've embedded in the text, you know, the acceleration of low carbon technologies, and that gets very complicated, but particularly carbon capture and storage. And that is the absolute joy of the fossil fuel industry, because they've been saying, you know, we can keep producing oil and gas and coal, but we capture the emissions from that with this great technology, which is in use in very small ways in certain, you know, maybe individual industrial plants. It's not been developed for massive scale use. The cost, the timelines, all on that, you know, it's really considered a kind of a fantasy solution, but now it's in the text. There's other concerns too about recognizing the need for transitional fuels, and that's a discussion that's gone on in Ireland when we've had them debates over whether we should have an LNG terminal, and the excuse is always given is, look, we don't have enough renewables here, so until we do, we're going to need a transitional fuel, and the cleanest one, it's better than oil, it's better than coal, is gas, and we can get it in the form of liquefied natural gas. So that's in there too, and those are the kind of things that are really worrying the climate activists, the NGOs, and some of the scientists. There's been some very fast reaction this morning from scientists, and some of them are saying, no, it's very significant, and some of them are saying, no, they wanted it to be stronger. It's tied in with other issues. It's tied in too with there's been some reform of financial systems. Now, this is where it gets really confusing. Science systems are confusing, finance is worse. But there is a point that you cannot just tell countries to get rid of fossil fuels if they don't have the means to build up renewables. We have in Ireland, we have a whole system going on. We have investors, we have companies, we have link-ups with other, we have ports in one place going to supply this, that, and the other. We have a whole scheme underway to get wind going in Ireland big time, and solar also. Some countries don't have that. They're really, you know, not even on the starting block. And particularly poorer countries, investors don't want to invest in them. They'll invest in coal and oil so the cows come home because they're familiar with it. They know how it works. They know there's a market for it because if they keep putting it out there, it'll keep being used. It's very hard to get them to invest in
that. Being said, though, is there not a big push on the moment at the moment for us actually to have a pathway for offshore, onshore, whatever it might be, wave energy? Because there is money washing around out there. There are people mad to invest in this renewables, but we're so far behind the curve. They're looking at what can they put the money into now or next year, not in 4, 5, or 6 years. So, you know, that's where the sort of state has a responsibility to do its bit, you know, internally, rather than maybe banging a drum in Dubai.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do know that there are a lot of companies who want to invest. The problem is, and these are things that I wasn't aware of until the past 2 weeks, you know, interest rates When you're borrowing millions and billions, it counts. Interest rates are much higher, apparently, for borrowing to invest in renewables, because the banks will say, well, you know, they've only been around, you know, wind farms have only been around 10, 15, 20 years. They're getting bigger. We don't know exactly what's going to happen to them. Whereas, you know, for 150 years, they've reliably known how you know, coal mines and oil fields work. So they're charging more for it. So there is a need. You know, investors might be willing to invest in these renewables, but they want to get a return on the money, because, return for their investment. Mm-hmm. Because, okay. And we're not going to go back to the stage where the Irish state piles money into big energy infrastructure. These things are privatised. That's kind of how it is. And unfortunately, apparently, we have to make it attractive to them. And Ireland is quite attractive. You know, Uganda was upset about some of the text, for example, because they said, you know, we're not going to get people in, you know, to do large-scale solar or large-scale renewables, so please don't take our fossil fuels away. We often think of Saudi, maybe, or the richer countries as being the ones who block any move against fossil fuels, but there's actually quite a number of poorer countries who are really kind of panic-stricken when they think that the only energy source they have and the only source of external investment they have, you know, could be taken away from them. So from that point of view, you know, fossil fuel phase-out, good punchy slogan, would have been lovely to see it in there, I think, from perspective of most campaigners, but it's complicated.
It is. You've 8 hours to figure it out before you get home. Okay. Listen, thanks very much for your time, Caroline. Safe journey back.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. Caroline O'Doherty there, environment correspondent with the Irish Independent. As you would have heard from the stings coming in, our programme is brought to you this week in association with our friends at McGee's Chemist. And each day we've got a great prize for you. And as you'd expect, then we have a bumper prize for you on Friday. I'll give you the details of that now, because I'm inviting you to text in. What do you have to text in? Just your name, where you're from. We have your number and your number. Text that in. Your name, where you're from, and your number. And one of you, or maybe a few of you, we'll see how it goes, will be selected to come on air and answer a question, which is effectively, what is a Christmas song that we're playing? It's about 10 seconds long. It's played backwards. If need be, I can try and help you out. I don't know. See how generous I feel a little later on. But today we have a 50 milliliter Chanel Coco Mademoiselle EDP spray for the ladies, though. Anyone can use it. It's up to you out there, whatever you want to do with it. So that's the prize today. It's a 50 milliliter Chanel Coco Mademoiselle EDP spray, ladies. So we'll invite you to come on and answer a question. And that question being is, what is the Christmas song? Most of them are pretty recognisable, okay? And what do you have to do to enter? Nothing really, other than text or WhatsApp 086 60 25,000. Give us your name, where you're from, and your number. And then whoever is successful today goes into the qualifiers draw on Friday, and they may well win a hamper worth over €500, courtesy of McGee's Chemist in Letterkenny and mcgees.ie. And it contains a Clarins Christmas hamper, a blank canvas 12-piece gold makeup brush set. Now, don't go hanging on that on your wall. We've got one to hang on the wall, but you don't want to be hanging your blank canvas on the wall. We have a large blank canvas purple 3-piece gift set, a Be Perfect muted palette, a Jimmy Choo ladies fragrance. Now, you can hang this on your wall. It's a 20 by 16 gallery wrapped canvas, so you can have your favourite photos wrapped in canvas and ready to hang on the wall. We've got a couple of these and they are lovely. So the 5 daily qualifiers will be in the draw on Friday. And today's qualifier wins 50 millilitres of Chanel Coco Mademoiselle EDP spray. So get in touch with us right now. 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts. And all it is your name, where you're from, your number. That's all you have to do. And also, just a reminder, and I don't want to be standing here like I'm trying to flog everything, but it's to try and give you opportunities to win. That's why I'm mentioning it. Because before the end of this show, in the last hour, one of you is going to win €2,000, fingers crossed. We're going to be calling someone as part of our big Christmas car draw giveaway. We have £1,000 a day over 10 days, and we didn't get an answer yesterday, so it's rolled into today. So if you've bought a car ticket, please, if you can, have your phone beside you. We'll give you a ring and hopefully you'll answer. And all you have to do then is decide what to spend your €1,000 on. It's not too late to get tickets to be in today's draw as well. There's still 9 grand up for grabs plus the car. which is worth over 30. It's down in the Letterkenny Shopping Centre, a sort yesterday. It's a beauty. So you can go onto our website, highlandradio.com, quick and simple for you to buy your tickets there. You can give us a call on 07491 25000. We'll get it processed for you. Or if you're in and around Letterkenny and you don't do card, you can call in and pay with good old cash at Highland Radio Mountain Top. That's where we are here. And it's quite simple. Literally, as people are buying tickets, the numbers are going into the draw drum, the trombola, which is here. So that's as simple as it is. But your name can't be in there unless you buy your ticket. Right. People are against COVID vaccines. I got my booster the other day. I'm only in my 50s, but I feel better with it. Protected. Okay, that's good for you. You know, and my attitude has always been that it's up to you. And so I'm glad that you feel protected and happy with it. What's your opinion on nude art? Should it be displayed? Is it okay to show in schools? France's education minister said he'll never accept school pupils refusing to look at art amid a row over a teacher showing her pupils a painting of nude women. I think it depends on the painting. I mean, we've all seen the statues and they're all over the place where you have your boys with the boys, you know, out, they're nude. And there's always been art showing nudity. Then when you start talking about it being in schools, obviously then there has to be a little bit of context. What are we talking about here? But anyway, the question is of you out there today, have you a view on nude art being shown to students? Are you for or are you against? Someone I know well had their spring broke on the ramps in Letterkenny. The council have said off the record that a number of cars have been damaged. Can you ask your listeners, have they had these problems? These ramps are popping up all over the place. I've come across four new locations with these ramps in them. Have you hit one? Did you damage your car? Do you think there's enough signage? Some of the signage can be really quite wee. And if you know, at night when it's raining, it's hard to see those white arrows on them. But anyway, do you have a view on these speed ramps that are popping up, not just around Letterkenny? There's one popped up in Downings there not so long ago as well. Let us know what you think. 08660 25000. Rightio, first hour in the bag. Loads to come on the show.